This is Wilderness and Wildlife, presented by the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. This is a half-hour program featuring commentaries and interviews with wildlife and wilderness advocates relating to the natural environment that we enjoy in the wildlands of the West and all across America. I'm your host, Jay Schell. Well, today again, we are interviewing Tom Rogers, doing the second part of an interview that we started a few weeks ago. He's a Native American activist, and he's an advocate for tribal issues in Washington, D.C. Rogers is an enrolled member of the Blackfeet Nation in Montana, and in the Siksika language, he's called by his Blackfoot name, which means one who rides his horse east. So Tom is in the east in Washington. He was named by Politico magazine in 2023 as one of the top 40 most powerful and impactful people in the nation for his work on public policy that involves Native Americans, as well as on the cannabis policy. He was the whistleblower of the largest congressional scandal in the last 100 years, the Jack Abramoff scandal. And he was acknowledged by both the Obama and Biden administrations as the best advocate and lobbyist for Native people in the nation. So, since we talked a week, welcome, Tom. It's good to be talking with you. And since we talked a few weeks ago, you attended the Democratic Convention in Chicago. What was your reason for attending? Were you representing the interests of tribal nations?
Yes, I was, my friend. And John, first of all, it was so kind of you to allow us to tell our story, and I cannot thank you enough for your grace. I really, really want to thank you for that.
Uh-huh.
And you are correct, John. I was there representing tribal interests, observing this kind of historical moment of the Democratic Party nominating a woman and a woman of color. And so I did not, you know, life comes down to moments, as you know, John. And not years, not days, not months, not decades, it comes down to moments. And I did not want to miss this historical moment, and I wanted to see that Native interests were recognized and acknowledged.
Did the convention actually recognize and respect tribal sovereignty in any way?
Oh, yes. I mean, you had a series of seminars and meetings with, you know, the vice president and also, of course, the nominee to be vice president, Tim Walz. Came over to a number of the briefing sessions that the tribal member leaders had. Of course, you know, you had Deb was there. Talked to her when she was there. She's the Secretary of Interior, Deb Haaland. Please forgive me for that moment. I'm just, unfortunately, my dear friend, as you know, it's election season, so I'm just slightly on the exhausted side. But no, it was a magical convention, but absolutely exhausting.
Uh-huh. So how did you feel about the outcome of the convention?
I felt very good.
Uh-huh.
I felt very good about it. It was a lot of extreme energy, a lot of intensity, a lot of focus, which was needed. Because the previous, unfortunately, and I say that very unfortunately, President Biden in his statement, he acknowledged what needed to be done, and true to his words and his grace, he yielded the field. And that is an incredible act on his part. And with the vice president as the nominee to be the president of the United States and care of the Democratic standard bearer, it was a magical moment, and I was glad there was when history was being made.
And assuming Harris and Walz prevail in the election, what do you expect with the next administration in 2025?
Well, I think it's always an expansion on sovereignty. Indian country has a lot of pressing issues, as you know. And so with this new generation of leadership, like I said, we're entering a new generation, a decade of people who have had more experience with Native people around the country. And with Governor Walz in Minnesota, and you know, now they have, you know, they have a well represented in the state of Minnesota with all of the tribes that are there, and Governor Walz has had a great relationship with them. I know the vice president. We've invited her to forums before that we've held for Native Americans in the different election cycles, and she's participated.
Mm-hmm.
She knows. She knows what the Native vote means in Arizona. She knows what the Native vote means in Nevada. She knows what the Native vote means in Minnesota and Michigan and Wisconsin and Pennsylvania and Georgia. And then when you look at the Senate race, what the Native vote means in Montana for control of the United States Senate, because if Vice President Harris were to be win the presidential race, you need to have the Senate, because otherwise her agenda is severely curtailed, given the you would have, of course, Mitch McConnell, and then you have a successor. And so it is critical for her agenda and Governor Walz's agenda, and he would be the vice president, that they would have the support of the United States Senate.
So Deb Haaland has been the Secretary of the Interior for the last three and a half years. And I assume that you're very pleased to have Deb Haaland there. She's a member of the Laguna Pueblo. I assume that she's been of help. Do you think she will carry over into the next administration if Harris is elected?
I have nothing to go on, John, on that question. No factual basis, but I don't think so. Usually it's rare when a cabinet secretary does carry over. I can think of maybe a Department of Defense secretary. I think maybe Robert Gates carried over from one administration to the next. But I don't think so. I think that, I'm sure for Deb, Secretary Haaland, it's been exhausting. But with the new administration, just like, when Vice President Harris had assumed the mantle of being the Democratic nominee, she installed some of her new campaign people. It's only natural that you would want your own staff, on cabinet. So even though Deb, in her position, what a wonderful moment in history for all Native people in this country, I don't know if any of the cabinet secretaries would carry over to the new administration. I might be wrong, and that is only conjecture on my part, John. But mm-hmm. I don't believe, historically, that has not been the model.
But you feel that that Harris we'll have a Secretary of Interior who is going to be sympathetic to tribal interests?
I would hope so. I mean, look at today, John.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, as you know, the battle for the United States Senate is coming down to Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Montana. You have a Democratic candidate, John Tester, who in the state is, Donald Trump won this state by 15, 16 points. But yet the Native vote has always been in the high 80s percentiles from tribes for John. John won one precinct on the Fort Belknap Reservation. 98.6% of the vote went for John.
So you sent me an article indicating that Tim Shee, Tester's opponent, has offended the tribal interest with some of the things that he said.
Right. Yes, it was. He referenced us as drunks, Native people, and specifically the Crow Nation.
Mm-hmm.
So we found that you cannot defame people like that. You cannot defame the Native American brothers and sisters all throughout the country. And he made those remarks in Shelby, Montana.
Mm-hmm.
Shelby is a town in northwest Montana near the Blackfeet Reservation, about 70 miles, and about 3 miles from where he made those remarks. And once he made those remarks, John, you can hear laughter in the room with him.
Mm-hmm.
So he referenced us as drunks.
Mm-hmm.
And then his supporters in that private closed-door event started laughing. And that was 3 miles from the Marias River Massacre.
Yeah.
The Marias River Massacre was one of the largest massacres of Native Americans in this country. 200 Blackfeet women and children were massacred by the U.S. Cavalry in 1870. And as I was in my mind, I had the juxtaposition, John, of the Blackfeet women and children running and screaming towards the Marias River, and the officer in charge of that massacre said the following in a BIA report. He submitted this in his official document to the BIA. He said he told his soldiers that if they ran out of bullets, they could use the pickaxes on the women and children. And he also said he was heartened to see the cold waters of the Marias River merge with the blood of the Blackfeet women and children. So, Mr. Sheehy, if you were a true Montanan and you had any knowledge of Native people, you made those remarks 3 miles where 200 women and children were massacred. And then you laughed at us. Laughed. That is, it's immoral, it's unethical, and it's hateful.
And so, subsequent to those remarks that were made last November, Sheehy has never offered an apology, is that right?
No, not one. Not only an apology, not even an answer. Good, bad, or indifferent. He has simply ignored the Native people of the state and nationwide. This was just not an insult to the Crow Nation, to the Montana Native people, but he was also it's insulting to American citizens generally. He thinks that, all I can need to do is ignore this. Remember, the opposite of love is not hate. It's indifference.
All right.
And he has remained indifferent by his silence. And he ascribes to the trope, campaign trope of, let's just move on. There's no need to apologize. I don't know where he was raised. I don't know what. That's not accurate. I do know where he was raised. He was raised in Minnesota.
Right.
If you're raised in Minnesota, you should have
a sensitivity. Much more,
exactly. Awareness. Especially remember, Minnesota is the site of Mankato, Minnesota, which was the largest simultaneous execution in our nation's history, where Sioux warriors were simultaneously hung. I think the number was, correct me if I'm wrong, John, approximately 36 at the very same moment.
Hey, Tom, let me move on a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
For Native Americans, it seems to me there are forces that pull in opposite directions. One is the assertion of Native American rights, and the other is accommodating and integrating to the dominant society. Is that a reality, or do you find that to be an issue or a problem?
Well, you know, life is about compromise. Both with the assertion of sovereignty, that needs to be manifest in our minds as Native people. But I've been in politics long enough, over 30 years. I've worked in legislation for over 30 years. I don't take a backseat to anybody when it comes to the assertion of sovereignty. But I also know, in order to get things done, I'd love to live in an age where I get everything I want, but that's not the case. You don't get everything you want in your personal relationships and your professional relations. What you need to do is, compromise is a word of strength. It is not a word of weakness. And when we can advance the agenda and move the agenda forward for Native people as aggressively as we can, but realizing that at some junctures and at some points you need to compromise, and then you come back another day. America and legislation is about incrementalism. And what you need to do there is you need to work the issue. It took me 10 years to change the name of that horrible mountain named after that individual who massacred those 200 Blackfeet women and children. His name was Gustavus Doan. And they named the dominant society in this country, named a mountain after him in Yellowstone Park called Mount Doan. 10 years, within 10 years from 2012 to 2022, it took me 10 years, but I got that name changed. You work it. You work it, and it's called grit. Work the issue. Work the issue. Prevail, persevere, persevere, persevere. then when you don't get all you want, come back the next year. Get a little bit more. When you don't get everything you want, come back the next year.
Yep.
Americans have too much ADD in this country. They think, I want it today. They've been staring into their junk phone so long, John, that everything is the dopamine has to hit them immediately. No. Anything worth having is worth working for. And what you need to do is work the issue. Work it. Work it. And ultimately, you will prevail. But you cannot have everything you want in the moment.
Tom, let me ask you about wilderness. Certain areas have been designated by Congress as wilderness in this country. How do tribal groups regard those wilderness areas?
Well, we're at a... first of all, we are the first environmentalists in this country. We have a more holistic concept of land and what it means.
Mm-hmm.
That it is our soul, our sustenance. We view our wolves, our bison, our bears as native, our ravens, our eagles as our native brothers. We also view that the land cannot be owned. But here we have a society that we are working in, and we view the wilderness aspect of that is something is so needed in this world today. As I was just referencing, we have become junk-filled in our lives with meaningless celebrification, meaningless staring down at our iPhones playing Candy Crush, looking at the latest TikTok or Instagram account. What we need to do is walk into the wilderness. Walk into the peace, seek the solace, and escape this junk that we have in our society and seek that moment of quiet solitude where you can kind of connect with your soul. And that's what wilderness is about. And that's what we're trying to achieve. I'm working on an effort now in and around Yellowstone Park, which used to be our Aboriginal land. And here we are now. We're facing interests who will line the border of Yellowstone Park with carcasses so they can shoot wolves and bears. Once again, immoral.
Mm-hmm.
But we want to create a sanctuary which borders Yellowstone Park. And that would be a sanctuary not only for our native brothers and sisters, wolves, bison, grizzlies, eagles, but for people. No more mechanization. No more ATVs. No more mountain bikes. We want solitude,
uh-huh.
So you can connect with your inner self. And that's what Native people are about.
So you do advocate for wilderness designations?
Oh, yes, absolutely.
Uh-huh.
Absolutely. And once again, I know that sometimes that requires compromise. But we can advance that cause, and what we'll do is we'll come back for more. It's not a wilderness of the classic where people of the dominant society think, well, you know, let me roll in there with my ATV. Let me roll in there with my, no, walk in. Ride a horse in. But make your, how should I say this? Provide enough time noting the fact that Native Indigenous people have been here for 10,000 years, John. 10,000 years have they occupied this area, over 10,000 years, this landmass we call North America. Connect with that. Get that sense of geological time. I have such a small moment in time here.
Right.
Why do I want to junk it up with cell phone in this beautiful cathedral of nature? Because that's what it is. It's a cathedral. And that's what wilderness can be. Suicide levels are off the charts, as you know, John.
Uh-huh.
Our youth are consumed with celebrification and what do I look like? Am I pretty enough? Disconnect from that garbage, that junk, and reconnect with yourself and reconnect with nature. Like I said, that cathedral, which nature is, that the Creator gave us. That's what you should do, and that's how you can heal yourself mentally, physically, emotionally.
So, Tom, do you advocate strongly for co-management of areas that, like wildlife preserves and monuments and parks and so on, that have been designated by the government and set aside for those purposes?
Oh, you know, to be honest with you, I'd love to have the tribes run the whole game, the whole show.
Huh?
But once again, what you strive for is the most powerful outcome you can for Native people, realizing that you will need to make accommodations.
Mm-hmm.
If you realize it, you will need to compromise. Once again, compromise is not a weak word. It is a strong word. And so, therefore, when we have all of these, our efforts in the area of nature and wilderness and the different monuments that we are seeking to protect and our sacred sites, it is always about decision-making, the power to decide. Who has the power to decide? Because when I worked on any Native issue and I encounter opposition, it's all about who's going to ultimately be the decision-makers. Well, we need to be at the table. I worked in the United States Senate for over 3 years, and I've worked outside of the Senate, but with the Senate for over 30 years. And you need to be in the room with the other individuals making the decisions. If you do not, your voice will not be heard, and you will be ignored. And that is why it's so important that tribes continue to press politically, environmentally, to be at the table, in the room, making those decisions along with the other stakeholders. You have to be part of the process. If you're not part of the process, other people will not hear your voice. To be apathetic, to be cynical, to sit on the couch, whether it's nature or whether it's voting rights, that's not a solution. That is weakness. That's giving up. You need to be in the room. You need to be there making decisions when it comes to nature and wilderness, and you need to get off that damn couch, and you need to go vote. Because politicians respond to three things: organized ideas, organized votes, and organized money. That's it. You need to channel into one of those three or all three. But get off your ass, go and vote, and be in that room making those decisions for the 10,000 people that came before you as your ancestors and the 10,000 people who will come after you.
Right. So talking about wildlife, what's the tribal objective in regard to wildlife? Do they observe endangered and threatened wildlife under the Endangered Species Act, or is there some disagreement there?
No. The tribes have always, like I said, now each tribe is different. We're not monolithic, just like the 50 states of this union are not monolithic. There are 576 Indian tribes. Each have their own reverence for different aspects of nature. And what, once again, we communicate and we talk with our Native brothers and sisters with the bison. It is a religious act. It is a sacred act. And we pray to it. We ask for permission. We ask for forgiveness. It provided our warmth. It provided our food. It has provided our sacred obligation. So therefore, here we are. And I know some people say, well, why would you ever kill the Ini, as we say in Blackfeet? Oh, no, we pray to it. We ask for its forgiveness. We ask for, it is a celebratory thing, a sacred thing to us. It is not done to hang on the wall like some trophy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not what we're about. It's a different culture, a different mindset. It's like a massive weaving together of love and unity,
mm-hmm.
with a single thread that you... It's so much more holistic than the simple act, I'm going to get out my 30-yard sticks, I'm going to walk out here, and I'm going to shoot this animal 200 yards away, and then I'm going to hang it on the wall. We've had enough death, enough diminishment, enough destruction, enough burning, enough drilling. There's so much violence in all of those words. What we need is healing, healing for this earth. Look at what we're encountering, John, right now. We've got wildfires in California consuming up and down the state of California.
Mm-hmm.
You've got cholera throughout Africa because they don't have the adequate clean water. We have the Pope, even whatever you think of Catholicism, whatever you might think of it, good, bad, or indifferent. The Pope issued, you know, his encyclical on nature and the environment here, what was back in 2015. And I've had my own, like I said, I'm Irish and I'm Native, so I am not a organized Roman Catholic follower at all. But I did appreciate this man who speaks to a lot of people issuing an encyclical on nature and the environment and how it needs to be a moral battle, a spiritual battle. That is in alignment with Native people. It is a moral battle, a spiritual battle, but we want to be part of those decisions. And that is what we're about. And that's what we need to remind America, that the environment is healing. It is not Disneyland. It is a sacred cathedral to our Creator.
Let me ask you about trapping and snaring and, in Montana, where the governor, where the administration has been loosening up on regulation of those practices. How do tribal groups feel about trapping and snaring?
Well, what we have witnessed here in the state of Montana with the governor of Montana, Gianforte, who has, how should I say, who was caught in his own moral and ethical quandary when he was trying to decide what the truth was with his own actions when it comes to wolves, trying to shift the blame to a game warden.
Right.
That was upsetting enough. But wolves are part of our creation story. They're part of the Blackfeet creation story. They are protectors. They are part of how we, when I lost a love of my life, I reminded her that the Mokiye, the wolf, will appear to her and protect her. And she will walk you to your place amongst the stars. The Mokiye Trail, the wolf's trail, which is the Milky Way. So it is once again, I hate to overuse this word, but the immorality and the absolute disgust that I hold for those who would trap, snare, run down with dog, chase them with snowmobiles, chase them with helicopters, chase them with other vehicles. I would like, you know what I'd like to do to them? Let me give them a 200-yard head start. Let me run them down.
Yeah.
And then when I corner them, let me stick the dogs on them.
Yeah.
Let's be reminded of what occurred in Wyoming here recently, where some warped individual trapped a wolf, duct taped its mouth, walked it on a chain inside a bar, and then took it outside and shot it. That is, there is a darkness in some of these people's souls that I cannot understand. We've all had trauma in our lives. We've all had loss in our lives. The question is how you deal with that trauma and how you deal with that loss. And some people deal with it with darkly, and they project more darkness, more violence, more death, and this constant need for dominance instead of co-living, cohabitation, and living in unison with nature and in unison with our native brothers and sisters. There's this constant need to dominate. They just lost their way. And hopefully, at some point, and you see it throughout society, because we have more people contemplating suicide, more people mentally ill, more PTSD. There's no healing. Where's the healing? Walk out into nature and heal, and let it heal you.
All right.
So rather know we need to shoot it, dominate it, and then stand next to it and take our picture with it on a wall.
We have run out of time, but I really appreciate the perspective that you've given us for what you're doing on behalf of the tribes of America.
John, you have been so patient, so kind, and such a man of grace, and I just want to say this to you. I cannot thank you enough for allowing me the permission to tell our native story.
Well, thank you. It's been a privilege to talk to you, and I look forward to perhaps doing it again in the future. So thank you very much, Tom. It's good to talk to you. So our guest today has been Tom Rogers. He's a Native American activist and advocate for tribal issues in Washington, D.C. He's a member of the Blackfoot Tribe in Montana. This has been Wilderness and Wildlife, a presentation of the Gallatin Wildlife Association in Bozeman, Montana. To hear more of these half-hour interviews, go online to kgvm.org or buzzsprout.com. Additional features of our website at js-wilderness.com. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Jay Schell.